C1A, number 29B.
It asks us to put all the obstructions out of the way. That's so principle life. It says in soul, put away yourself and think. Put away your preaching and let the principle sound through you. And as life, it shows that this is asking us to lay down our mortal sense of life so that the eternal flow of life has a chance to express itself. This putting away of the obstruction is really a struggle and is shown in this chapter as a struggle. But let us be clear what sort of struggle. It isn't a struggle for the unity with God. We are not struggling for the unity with God. That unity with God has been established since Abraham was, and it was the foundation in chapter on prayer. Prayer never went out from a sense of lack, always went out from the mind-like and spirit-like and the soul-like, never went out from a sense of lack, always from the sense of the fullness of mind and the fullness of spirit. But the struggle now comes in, which comes in is that, but by heaven's sake, let all that go which tries to take away this unity with God. The struggle is not for the unity with God, but the struggle is with that which wants us to take away from the unity with God. That's a very big difference, and a very comforting difference. See, the religious sense in us would like to say, well, you have a big job before you. You are a sinner, and you are full of lack, full of shortcomings, and so on. And somehow you have to struggle and struggle to find your unity with God. The truth then presented here right from the beginning is that atonement exemplifies man's unity with God. Atonement is the exemplification of man's unity with God, whereby man reflects divine truth, life, and love. See, it goes out from the unity. And our struggle here is only to struggle against all those serpents which try to disunify us with God. So let's keep in mind this point. That because when reading the chapter on atonement and Eucharist, the impression may creep in, and it's a suggestion may creep in and which says, oh, it's a big job. I think I can never do it. The truth is we are always Son of God. We are always one with the divine. The kingdom of heaven within us is a fact. The struggle which seems to be big is to put away all that which tries to disunify us with God. Now, a second point which is a comfort is this, that we begin to see that the power with which to handle this proposition comes from within, comes from prayer. That as we nurture prayer, as we strengthen prayer in our whole makeup, that in the measure as our whole feeling, thinking, living, doing, aiming, all the ambitioning in us is lined up with prayer, the bigger resource of spiritual qualities do we have without our sinful sense. So we have the seed within ourselves. You see, the Word has a Christ. The Word has a Christ. What does it mean? What does it mean? See, we must see that the Word and the Christ are not two separate categories. The Word is a category, the Christ is a category, but they are not separate. They are not separate. Being is one. They are two categories, but they are one. They are one in essence. They are one in being. Look like what we will see in it. And that must be our life. This trend from the Word to the Christ must be something which goes with us morning, noon, and night. The Word in prayer has established in us those wonderful pillars of consciousness, of qualities of consciousness, which are in rapport with God, which can pray and be in communion with God. It was established in considering those qualities and in establishing them in consciousness. We established the Word. But the Word comes and says, I can't have the anti-Word beside me. The world in prayer says, I can't have the full sense of prayer beside me. The world in prayer says, either you accept prayer as that what scientifically has been presented in it, and then if you do, you you relinquish, you get rid of that which is the counterfeit of it. So the world asks for the Christ. The world asks for an action. The world asks for a very definite operation, inward operation, namely to out error. The world says, I cannot be established if beside me other false senses of prayer are established. The world says, I have a Christ. The world says, I'm the only world and I can have no other world beside me. And so I out it out. And so the command always is settled in us that if I pray aright, I must out a false sense of prayer, to pray wrong. Quite natural. And so the world has a Christ. The world demands an outing out. The world demands that Christ which comes to error to destroy that error. So we have seen last time that really the first subject of prayer links up to the first subject of atonement. The second subject of the first chapter is the second subject of the second chapter, and so on. And this is a point which we may consider again, because in there I see the pith really of the two chapters, that we grasp how a better understanding of the first subject in the first chapter has a Christ and demands the ousting out of all that which obstructs the realization of this first chapter. Let's go through it to take always the first chapter and the second chapter in its correlative subject. But as a spiritual evolution, as an evolution which is our way of life, which is our proposition which we have to work out, here or later. And it is a fundamental proposition and not just any old proposition. The first subject in prayer says, open your thought, your mind, to the definition of God as He is. Open your thought, unspoken thought, to the God as He is, to the mind of God. Well, that statement of the word asked for the Christ, namely to out in the second chapter any false, egoist sense of mind, says man cannot atone for himself. We have to sacrifice our own way of thinking. We have to sacrifice our own egoist mind, to let go of the indefinite mind of our own, and to put ourselves under the guidance of the one mind. Can you see the linking? But put it again, just to get into the rhythm, that in the measure as prayer tells me, open your mind to see God as He is, that demands, the Christ demand, that demands that I put away my own mind, my selfish mind, my egoistic mind, my indefinite mind, my way of my own, to have the way of my own. And that was the subject, first subject of Atonement and Eucharist. Take the second prayer, which says, and now, as you have thought God as He is, worship it, love it, worship it, adore it, take it in, love the good, love that spiritual. Well, if I do that, then the world says in me, yes, but that demands that we put out of our affection, our adoration for the material, for the ritualist, for the animal. And that's what the second subject in Atonement Eucharist asks us, to put away other gods, to turn away from material sense of things, to look towards the imperishable things of spirit, to sacrifice other gods, to sacrifice materialistic worth, to put aside material selves and things, all that thing. Can you see this point? But let's see that we are interested in it in a living, practical way, namely interested in it as concerning our very being. Not just so that we say, now we know the connections of two chapters. Let's see the connections within us, in our own structure. That we see as the second, oh yes, my whole heart goes out to love that God as He is. Prayer, second subject of prayer. And as I do that, I surely well begin to realize, well, I can't have two gods beside each other. I have to give up the other God. I have to turn away. I have to make a decision and a deciding step. I have to turn away from material sense himself. Has to turn away from the material facts as the center and circumference of all. And I have, in some way, turned my inward sense wholly to the spiritual. That is the Christ working in us. Let's take the third. The third prayer was that prayer of sincerity, which asked us to be sincere in following the definite order of Reformation, not to go into any speculation, but to be sincere in our prayer. Well, as we begin to feel that and begin to feel the sincerity that we have to put something into the scale of being, that we can't just speculate on these things, then the demand comes of the Christ and says, all right, then mean business. Then show it forth through action that you mean this. Therefore, persevere in that order. Be not a sluggard. Persevere. Sacrifice all your wavering and sacrifice all your doubts and occupy till I come. Don't give in. Wait and be not weary. It was all that which asked stick to the divine order. Not to give in. To be constant. To be perseverant. To have self-reliance, spiritual understanding, to get all that service, perseverance, way of going steadfastly towards the aim. See how the Christ comes in and asks us. The Christ, you see, the word alone says, be perseverant, says, I show you the order and the rule, and I tell you there is no speculation about it. But we can't leave it at that. Because that which wants to speculate in us, that which wants to be a sluggard in us, that which wants to be wavering in us, that which wants to be doubting and going the zigzag way in us, that has to be out of doubt. That has to go out, or we will never go the way. We will never reach the aim. And so Atonement Eucharist has come and says, all right now, if you want to go the way, all right, then the Christ says, be perseverant, occupy till I come. Don't waver. Don't give in. Go forward. Be perseverant. Rely on your spiritual understanding. Don't doubt. Gone from sense to soul. So we have always, you see, the Christ in Atonement Eucharist is always that which gives us the push to fulfill that which the Word in prayer has presented. Let's take the fourth prayer. The fourth prayer was that prayer of taking on a principled attitude, an honest attitude, an attitude in which everything in us is turned into one concordance. And we had that concordance where words and feelings and life and deeds are all concordant into a principled attitude. Well, that's the proposition. See, the Word always gives us the proposition. Sets the proposition right, so to say. Sets the proposition right. The Christ comes and presents the demands which this proposition has and says, all right, and that's what the Atonement Eucharist does in the fourth subject, says, all right, if you want to have a principled attitude, and if you want to stick to this principled attitude, what you have to do, you have to disatone yourself from a theological attitude, from a scholastic attitude, and from a doctrinal attitude, from a ritualistic attitude. We had all there, he was shown that atonement demands that we atone with a scientific or principled sense of atonement, but that we disatone with a theological sense of atonement, with a scholastic sense of atonement, with a ritualistic sense of atonement, with a religious sense of atonement, with a personal Jesus sense of atonement. See? Can you see that? The proposition of the Word always has a Christ, because it says that proposition has to be kept pure, and therefore it must out the counterfeit of the Word. That's the Word of the Christ. Word of the Christ is that Word which out the anti-Word. That in us which wants to be the anti-work, which wants to go against the work. And the Christ comes in and says, no, there is only room for one. Or we had the fifth subject in prayer, where we saw that a living prayer alone brings us into a new life, and that a dead prayer, a blind prayer, a blind faith prayer does not bring us new life, but only a new belief in life. So the proposition there again was that a living prayer full of devotion and consecration and desire, that brings us into a new life. Yes, that's all right, but that proposition has a Christ, has a demand on us, and says, I can only bring you a new life if you are willing to sacrifice your old sense of life, your best sense of life. And the fifth subject in Atonement and Eucharist, you remember, was all about that. That atoning with a new sense of life demands the laying down of one's own sense of life, of a worldly sense of life, of a ritualistic sense of life, or organic sense of life, and all that. It has a Christ. See, the honesty in us, if we take the word honestly, it has a Christ. If we take the word honestly, it says, then the counterfeit of the word has to go out. And we put it out, and that's the word of the Christ, and we put it out. Or let's take the sixth prayer. In the sixth prayer, you remember, we had the presentation of that great fact that as we go to the Father, we affirm really men. That as we go to the Father, and as we always go to the Father, because I go to the Father, we have the possibility that the new man is being brought out. Well, that's very nice. That's very wonderful. But the Christ comes and says, you can't have it just as a desire. You can't have it just as a wish, the holy desire. If you are going to the Father so that a new man is being born into you, you jolly well have to leave that old concept that you go to another Father, to your ancestry, and so on, just to find your old mortal self again. So Atonement and Eucharist has brought us, you remember, that wonderful passage of the sixth subject, which shows the whole life of Jesus from conception to fulfillment. One whole manhood. First time that the subject brought a whole sense of man from mind to love, from creation to fulfillment. But how did she show it there? She showed it there. That new man was only actually being born by going actually to the Father and being willing to let go the old man, to let go the old sense of father, the old sense of mother, the old sense of son, the old sense of relationship, the old sense of life, and the old sense of manhood, and the old sense of what real fulfillment is, to let all that go. Then the true Jesus could come into focus and blossom out into its fullness. So again, we can see, you see, that old question in us, that old desire in us, where we say, yes, I would like to be a new man. All right, how? Prayer says in the sixth subject, all right, you can be a new man. And you can be a new man if you go to a new Father, namely God. But the Atonement and Eucharist comes and says, but that will never realize itself in your life unless we are willing to let the old Father and the old man go. If we don't put out a false sense of creator and creation out of the way, and the new sense of man is being established. Or let's take the last subject, which is very lovely too. The last subject in prayer was that prayer of trustworthiness in God's care, that big, all-embracing prayer of trusting everything into God and into the allness of God and into the infinitude of God, and let God take care of it. But that means, demands something of us which is very big and which we seldom perhaps are willing to do. It says, all right, if you trust in God and God's way, then don't trust anymore in your way and in your plan of salvation, in your ambition of salvation, and in your outlook of what salvation is for you. Then be big enough and let yourself go. Let your planning go, let your outlining go, let your desires go. Then really let God work out his plan. Then really be willing to say to God, all right, do it with me what you like to do with me. I'm out of the picture. As a person, I'm out of the picture. It's that willingness, you see, to sacrifice, to put out of one's way one's own ego, one's own self, one's own intention, one's own ambition, one's own plans, one's own wishes. See, that's then the Christ. Can you see how the one leads to the other? Well, sooner or later we have to see it. Because if we can't see it, or if we don't experience it, we can never go further than prayer. Because if we can't see that Eucharist, which demands that all obstruction against the Word is put out of the Word, then the Word will always have friction, and there will always be friction and no harmony.